Welcome back to Hail Discordia. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in so-called Vancouver. I'm Izzy.
I'm Zoe.
And we are so happy to have you with us today. Thank you for joining us, y'all. We are always so grateful for your listening, and we're so grateful to be in the studio today. It's been a little while since you've heard from us, so we wanted to give you a quick little recap of what we've been up to.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, we've kind of been up to, like, a decent amount. I studied abroad. That was a lot of fun. I went to the Galapagos Islands for 6 weeks. I was in Ecuador for a couple of days, and then I went to Santa Cruz for probably, like, 4 or 5 days, and then to San Cristobal for 5 weeks, and then I was at a school. We were learning Spanish. We were, teaching assistants for kids who were learning English. It was a great time. It's hard to, like, summarize a, trip like that. It was
good. I feel like you just killed it, though.
Hey, thank you.
Zoe was literally in the Galapagos, guys. She's the coolest person ever.
Oh, my God. Thanks.
And what did we do this week, Zoe?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so this week was Bring Your Izzy to Work Day. Did y'all celebrate? Izzy came to work with me. And work just happened to be at BC Place for the weekend concert. And so for two days, we were like doing observational like data research. I'm not sure how much I can go into it, but just know that we just had to keep our eyes peeled on consumer behavior stuff. And in the meantime, when people weren't like doing the behavior that we had to be recording, which was for a decent amount of the show, we got to watch and dance a little bit.
We did do some dancing.
So it was a really thrilling. Fun time.
Thank you, Zoe, for bringing me to your work week.
Thank you for coming.
Because as far as work weeks go, that was like the littest thing ever.
Yeah. No, dude, it was awesome. We went for the Tuesday and the Wednesday show. Guys, the weekend, oh my God, those vocals. I actually don't really have words for how incredible and beautiful of a show that was.
Vocals go crazy. Like, vocals that mic insane. Was on.
Yeah. Well, if you went to the weekend show, either on the Tuesday or the Thursday, I hope that you play your favorite. Tell me, what was that song again that you like? With Lana.
Oh, that's Stargirl Interlude.
Yeah.
Shout out Darby Savage, because that was your favorite song 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll play that at some point.
And I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were a couple that I liked that I remembered. I, like, wouldn't have chosen to go to that show, but then I was thrilled to be there. It was also just very interesting to go to the exact same set twice in a row.
Yes, it was the exact same set. Some of the jokes he made to the crowd were the same. At one point, right, like, by the second show, of course, we were excited to be there, and it's a huge privilege. But mind you, we are definitely, like, clocked in. Like, we're doing work as well. So and we just had, like, things on our mind, things to do. It's getting late. We're there from like 6:45 p.m. to like 11. Like, you know, like by like 10:45, he does this thing where he goes, the lights go dark. And you're like, oh my gosh, like that was so incredible. Like, this is an incredible show. Like, I'm gonna start reflecting on it. Like, my Instagram story is getting posted now. And then he goes, y'all thought the show was done. Y'all thought you're going home. And the first night I'm like, wow, oh my God, like amazing. The second night, bro, I'm rocking a little bit. I'm like, oh my God.
We're like, let us go home, dude. Yeah. Let us go home.
But it really was like such an incredible show. It was amazing. I would see a show 2 times in a row again. Maybe not in a row. I would see the same show 2 times again for sure.
Yeah.
Back to back in a row, work in the morning, go to work at night, go to sleep, work in the morning, go to work at night, handle things in between. That was just a busy schedule. Obviously happy we won. Obviously like incredible show. Those last 15 minutes felt like those last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
And like we couldn't sit down the whole time. We're complaining about literally the coolest work
no,
ever.
No, exactly.
But it was tiring.
Yeah. I think that's just what work is.
It's always
a little bit, yeah.
But now we're really happy to be here.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely experienced, and you guys experienced, if you're here in Vancouver, a bit of what I heard it can be called Junuary, which is that June was a little dreary, like in, you know, inside and outside. But now the sun of July is upon us, and we're thrilled, and we're just thrilled to be in the studio with you guys. So importantly, we will get into a land acknowledgement, because we're both now back in the beautiful land of British Columbia, which, locally where we are, is the land of the Musqueam people, stretching to that of the Squamish and the Tsleil-Waututh nations. And these nations stewarded this land long before any of us came here. And it's very important to remember that we're uninvited guests on this land. And the work we do and the art we share is because of a very fraught colonial history. And we urge all of you listeners to consider that as you enjoy and share the sun and the sea today and each other's company, because there's a reason we get to be here and it isn't a good one.
Beautifully said, Izzy.
With that in mind,
here we're just getting all set up. Happy to be in the studio also. That in mind, we have a really fantastic episode lined up for you guys. We're going to be bringing you the highlight of what we read and then the highlight of what we heard. That's right. So it's what stood out to us in Discorder Magazine and what stood out to us and just what we've been listening to this past month. All of this CITR and Discorder Magazine related. We'll get into that shortly. But first, a little song for you guys.
Just ain't right, 'cause we're having off all your clothes, take off, take off. Take off all your clothes, take off, take off. Take off all of your clothes. And I lust for love.
Hey, what's up, everybody? That song was Lust for Life by Lana Del Rey.
Featuring The Weeknd, which is CanCon, y'all.
Featuring The Weeknd, which is CanCon.
Because he's from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to quickly jump into a couple ads for you guys, just because we love plugging our other student shows and all that gorgeous stuff. But right back from the ad break, you are going to hear an interview with Zoe and I and our very own Nicole. From this month's Discorder magazine, the June-July issue. It's a wonderful issue, as usual. Shout out to our fantastic editor-in-chief, Tasha, who is sporting a diva new hair color, if you see them in the station.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out, as usual, to all of our contributors. You guys mean the world, and you're so fantastic. And we're so grateful to have chatted with Nicole. So right after a few ads, you guys will hear that interview.
What do you love, and what do you love about it? My name is Ewan, and with I Love You Hour, I want to know. Come join me bi-weekly Tuesdays at 6 p.m. to discuss music and the stories we connect to it, either in person, on the phone, or through messages at I Love You Hour on Instagram. That's I-L-U-V-U Hour on Instagram, or through email at iluvhour@gmail.com. If you love sharing music and telling stories, listen to I Love You Hour bi-weekly at CITR 101.9. And remember, I love you.
It's Nardwuar, a human serviette, and you're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
Hosted by the Indigenous Collective of CITR 101.9 FM, Unseated Airwaves unveils the hidden pages of Indigenous history and contemporary existence. We are back and looking for passionate folks to contribute to the process of putting together our weekly radio show. Our community centers Indigenous joy, excellence, and current issues. Friends and allies are welcome. No experience is necessary. Come learn with us. Our Instagram is Unseated Airwaves, and that's the best way to keep up with us. If you're interested in getting involved or you have any questions, email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca.
Who's gonna take your place? There ain't nobody better. Oh, baby, baby, we belong together, baby.
Girl, please quit crying over your ex and pick up a damn book. Or better yet, Discorder magazine. It's summer, and that means it's time to head to the club with a drink in one hand and Discorder magazine in the other. That's right, shake some ass while staying in touch with the local arts and culture community. All for free. You can pick up a physical copy of Discorder in locations all around the Lower Mainland, from Kitts to Chinatown, Maine, and Commercial, as well as Hastings. For specific locations, check out citr.ca. There, you'll also be able to find a PDF of the June-July magazine issue. CITR and Discorder Magazine condones responsible drinking and responsible ass shaking. Thanks, love you, bye.
Community. Located on 2255 West Broadway, we are open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Tuesday to Saturday. That's RIDEON Bike Shop. See you there!
Hey Vancouver! Looking for your summer plans? MRG Live has you covered. Catch Caroline Kingsbury, and Maris, Emotional Oranges, and many more live on stage. Don't miss out. Grab your tickets now at www.admit1.com and follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram for fresh announcements and the full lineup of upcoming shows.
Thank you for listening to Hail Discordia on CITR 101.9 FM in so-called Vancouver. Today, Zoe and I are so blessed to be with Nicole Young, who has written a wonderful piece in the June-July episode of Discorder Magazine 2025. The piece is called The Thing Between Art and Politics, featuring Stefan Sunandan Honish, with words by Nicole Young and illustration by Isabel Gunna. And it's the second piece in the All Access Pass features situation. And we're just thrilled to have you with us here, Nicole, because this is a really fun part of the magazine that we wanted to get into.
Thank you. I think that it's funny that it's described as fun, because in my mind, like, I get really riled up about accessibility politics. So I'm like usually somewhat angry and frustrated when I'm writing. So in my head, it's like not a fun thing, but like reading it back is really fun to like see it all come back together.
Absolutely. And I think it's great that you have so much passion for it and that, you know, you have intense feelings, because that's what makes actually good writing. So to dive right into it, you write on page 4, quote, "An artist with a disability can only create within the context of securing the necessary resources to make their work possible." So the idea here is that an artist with a disability is preceded in their process by a resource challenge that sets them apart from able-bodied artists. So you express a worry that if art is inherently political in that way, it's hard to separate the identity from the art, and then disabled artists have this onus of like making just political work. So our question for you is, what do you think about considering a distinction between the artistic process and the art itself? So if the process is inherently political because it's limited systemically, does that make the art inherently political? Or is there a possibility of separation there?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because I think that's really the thesis of what my entire piece tries to answer. And I think the answer is unsatisfying in that it's like, it depends on what you view art as. I think art is inherently political because it's a human endeavor, and I think politics are an inherently human thing. So if you ask me, I would say no. I'd say any art, if you're disabled or able-bodied, is inherently political because of the context of the process that are used to create the art. But I know there are people out there who feel differently, and think that art and the process can somewhat be separated from politics. So unfortunately, it's just one of those classic philosophical, I feel one way, you may feel a different way.
Very classic.
So building on that, how do you think the social politicizing of art and its tie with identity would change, if at all, with a change in access, maybe from an audience perspective or from an artist perspective?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I think that the story of how art is created is really integral to understanding art. And I think that increased access would absolutely change something about the art. I don't know exactly what I could call it or how to place my finger on it, but imagine like an art piece that was created by someone with a disability or someone who has accessibility needs, but this art was only possible because of increased access to certain resources or certain processes. And then think of like what that art may look like if they didn't have that kind of access. So I do think that increased access would change art. And I think it would be somewhat political. I feel like the word political also kind of gets away from me here because it's just, it feels like such a catch-all. But in this specific context, I think it would make a statement to say this art was only possible because this person was given increased access to resources.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like that would add a very interesting layer to the art.
I hope I'm answering these questions.
No, you are. You totally are.
No, 100%. That is so interesting about how it would actually change the way that people might consume it to be more exposed to a process that's there, like whether they're aware of it or not.
Yeah, it makes me think a lot of, I was recently at the art gallery, like 2 weeks ago, and there's like a lot of collections at the art gallery now, right now. So I think there's two main exhibits, which are collections of like two art collectors from, I think one's from BC and one's from Quebec, but I'm don't quote me on that. One's definitely from BC. But I'm like looking at all the art and all the artists that these collectors have been consuming from. And I'm like, there's such interesting history here, but I can't help but wonder why certain artists were chosen over others. Mm-hmm. Was it because of like visibility? Like these artists had the ability to show their art in certain places, which had collectors be more inclined to purchase them. And those are things, those are experiences that some people just don't have access to. And it's not even necessarily in like a physical or able-bodied sense. It's sometimes just like a money barrier or like the right connections. But accessibility certainly does play another role. So I do think that like access absolutely plays a huge role in how your art is perceived. Like I think about artists who are being highlighted right now at the Vancouver Art Gallery versus like others who were maybe like this close, quote unquote, this close, but like couldn't like get themselves to a certain showing that day or like didn't have the means to transport their art. It's things like that.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Just like how much art goes unseen, like how much, just like the quantity of art that we're probably not seeing because of access barriers, whether it be financial or even just like the people you know, or obviously like an inability to get to places like you had mentioned. Like I wonder
what makes art valuable. Who decides like what makes art valuable?
Yeah.
It's like, unfortunately, I do think a lot of it is sometimes luck or hierarchy. Like this person went to this really prestigious art school, studied under this person. This person has these connections and could get into this show,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Yeah, I think that's where we see this like corporate concept that is kind of like just plaguing the entire like
world that we're in right now seep into something that is so like personal and expression of the self, whether that be about like your life or your emotions, whatever it's about, it's kind of, it's interesting. Okay, well, our next questions are going to be a bit more on like community, which go with this conversation. But while we're here, if you'd be able to read the soundbite that we're going to like dive into.
I so can. Okay.
So much.
I'm ready. I'm going to do it. I couldn't help and I concluded that perhaps it's because they want their art to transcend. We want art to be a sacred practice, one that can be immune from discourse around power structures, injustice, and hierarchies. We want to believe that there is a universal human language that we can all understand, that there is something in art that can unify us.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for reading that, Nicole. This was a part of the article that really was interesting to Zoe and I. So right before this section as well that you just read, you mentioned a quote from the pianist Nobuyuki Tsuji, who says, "I am not, quote, I am not a blind pianist, but a pianist who happens to be blind." And you mentioned, as you just did, that artists might reject disability labels so as to preserve art as a sacred space for them that is immune from this discourse that's happening. And to that we ask, do you think that that's what art is or what it should be? Because we do want art to be something that's universally relatable and that stands the test of time and is impactful years later. But also, is there a way that the reason it is impactful is because it's always something that's produced in the context of what we go through? Like, humans are always oppressed in different ways and uplifted in different ways and going through contexts that are the art in ways. And maybe that's what makes it relatable. Like, where do you think the role of art is there?
I think art can be both. I think it can be a sacred space, but I don't think it can universally be a sacred space. I think it can be a sacred space for individuals, but as a collective practice, I do think art is something that should tell a story and send a message. And I think a lot about a lot of Indigenous artists and Black artists, especially, who have used art as a form of protest and a form of opposing colonialism. And I think that those things should be universally understood as political and contextual. But I don't want to impose that responsibility onto people who have marginalized experiences. I don't want to say that their art should always be political and they always have a responsibility. But I think as like a collective from the outside looking in, it is a responsibility to understand art for what it comes from. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very well.
Absolutely. I think this conversation makes me think a lot about Amy Sherald. She was the artist who did Michelle Obama's like portrait when she was the first lady. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but her, not necessarily shtick, but like a through line that she has in her work is she paints a lot of. She'll paint Black people, but without like a skin tint or anything. Like, she'll paint it with like gray and then put like make the story around them, whether that be with the setting or the clothes they're wearing. There's a lot in the description and even the name of the piece to make it to in an effort to like decenter the racial identity of the people she paints from who they are, but that to me also feels like a response to that conversation. So I think you're absolutely right, and like it's difficult to, or even impossible to like fully separate these things because it's always going to be a part of the conversation. So my follow-up question with that would be, what do you think happens to art when it's touched by society? And when labels are attached to it upon its existence?
I love this question because it's so akin to like, if a tree falls in a forest and there's no one around to hear it, does it still make a sound?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that question because the whole point of it is asking what sound is. Is it something that is perceived? Is it simply a bunch of vibrations? And to me, this question is like, it translates so perfectly to the question of what art is before it's perceived. And I think that really kind of gets to my answer from the previous question about individual versus collective. I absolutely think that as an individual, you can simply perceive art as however you want. But as a collective, you have to really consider its impacts and who it's for. So I think when art is touched by society and when it is collectively perceived, it should be a direct response to how the world currently and formerly was, if that makes any sense. Like, I think that when art is touched by the world and labeled, it's like a very direct mirror to what we believe as a humanity. That was a super abstract answer.
No answer.
And it connects to what you were talking about earlier about, like, what art is in galleries, which art is remembered, which art is actually in the history books or things that we look through. And that's always been connected to, like, access. If you think about early art in Europe, it's, like, all about patronage. It's, like, who's interested also. And there is this element of, like, both options are true. Like, you have the individual connection, whether from the artist or the consumer, where there really can be something sacred because it's just your connection to that. It's intangible. But then there's the, what role is this playing for a group of people, and why is that role important, and what's the history there, and why is it necessary?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense of why your article was very, like, it's difficult to pin down an answer here, because art is just so complex for different people, and the politicality of it really depends on who's consuming, who's looking.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think you really nailed it on the head. It's such a difficult question to answer because you have these layers of, like, individual experiences with art and then experiences of art within certain marginalized communities, and then you've got, like, the whole society and the whole world, and then you get into different cultures. So I think that those different levels of groups have different responsibilities as to how they perceive art.
Totally. Yeah. I hear a lot of artists talk about sometimes when they're making art, they feel almost like possessed. Like there's some sort of a thing or a space like above them that's working through them to make art. Kind of a more spiritual or philosophical question, but do you think that there is some sort of space before where the art exists itself? And do you think it's ever possible to communicate what that space might have or entail, if so?
Wow. Super spiritual, philosophical. Yeah, I mean, like, it's just getting so abstract. Like, art kind of is like a feeling. It's like this desire to create something or say something or send a message. And I think art is really just how it's translated, whether it's through music or spoken word or physical or, I don't know, a dance performance. I do think that, like, art can exist before it's created.
Totally. Medium is the message. Got an anthropology like 200 and never let that go.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, humans are special things.
Mm-hmm. We're really weird.
Always in our potentiality.
So true.
Okay, wonderful. Zoe, do you have anything else you want to add before we move on to a final question?
No, I don't think so. I feel like I hit everything that was on my mind.
Wonderful. So, Nicole, you seem to leave this article in a state of uncertainty about the relationship between art and politics, although maybe having learned something about what our convictions really are. So now that it's been potentially a few weeks or more since you wrote this piece, a while at least, can you give us an update? Do you think that art and politics are separable?
I mean, I was super unsatisfied by Stefan's answer. Love him though. So I think that when he said maybe he doesn't know anymore, and that the reasons he feels that way are because of different people he's read and different thoughts that have influenced him, I feel that my convictions are similar. I think I have more of a sense that no, art and politics can't be separated. I think I lean more towards that end of the row. But at the same time, I do feel like it's just so dependent on the context that art is being perceived in. Like the way I think I would understand art when I'm talking to just my partner, who is a super art snob, I hope he doesn't listen to this, versus like a group that has like really personal ties to a certain piece would be very different. I think my partner is a lot more objective in looking at art for its components. And I think that he's able to look at art objectively and then also the message and what it represents. Like he was recently talking to me about photography, and there's this video online of like this person who talks about how angles really affect a portrait, and that a lot of female photography is taken from very like quote-unquote non-powerful angles, and how you see a lot of that in like political photography. And he was like, I gotta like practice on making you look powerful in pictures. And I was like, okay, man. But like in that sense, I think that like the way I would perceive art in a much more intimate setting with like my partner or like my sister or something, I'd be like, well, I really like the way these colors flow, and like I think it's really cool how this message was sent, versus like a different group would be so different. So I think I've thought a little bit more deeply about it since writing the article, which was maybe 2 months ago. I was also in like a very frantic state when I wrote it. So it was like, I think the purest of emotions. I felt very strongly in my convictions. That no, my convictions were like, no, art cannot be separated from the political. But like now that I just sit around all day and kind of think, I think that like it's just so contextually dependent. Yeah.
It's nice that that's going to be an ongoing process for you. Like probably you'll have more reflection, and in a year you might have changed your mind.
Yeah, I'll probably something... change my mind until the day I die.
Yeah. For us all to sit with. But I like that you brought that answer into like what our reactions are and how they depend on who we're with, and just all of the stages that art and we interact, like our interaction with it happens on so many different levels. And I guess it's something to always think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't love that there isn't an answer, but I don't know, that's philosophy, I guess. I can't believe
I said, you're a philosopher major, Nicole.
I got through a whole philosophy degree without getting any answers, and that really frustrates me. But it also felt very fulfilling. But for some reason, like this question, maybe it doesn't feel quite as fulfilling. Maybe I just need to learn more about it and gain different insights, and then I'll feel more fulfilled.
Okay, amazing. This was our interview with Nicole. Huge thanks again to Nicole for doing this interview. It was really awesome to speak with her, and it was a really beautiful piece. The piece is All Excess Past Number 2, The Thing Between Art and Politics, featuring Stefan Sedain. Honish, words by Nicole Young, and illustrations by Isabel Ghana. Okay, amazing. Well, super recommend that you guys check out that piece. It's at a Discorder near you. Now, that is what we read. Now we're going on to what we heard. Okay, so I had the really awesome and incredible opportunity to go to Sled Island in Calgary, which is a music festival. It's a really interesting festival with the way that it's set up. Specifically, the festival picks a band or some musician to curate the festival and curate what other bands are going to be coming and playing and who they have opening when they're headlining and things. And it's just a very hands-on process that I thought was really interesting. And you can see the fingerprints of the curators in the headlining band of this year, Otoboke Beaver, in all of the shows. Okay, so I'll just gonna go through what that experience was like all the way through. And I have some little sound clips for you guys, so we're gonna get into it. I'm excited for you guys to hear this. I haven't told Izzy like any of this also.
I'm so excited to hear it. I'm gonna listen to a lot for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I got some like little clips as we were prepping for this, and I think you guys are gonna laugh.
I think you're gonna like it.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, starting with June 19th, Thursday, I land in Calgary. Mind you, I've just finished my study abroad on, I think I got back like the 15th or the 16th. So I immediately land, and then I sleep, do a bunch of errands, book my ticket, coordinate with Alicia, who is the Discorder exec for our student executive team this upcoming year. Shout out Alicia. We coordinated on what bands we're going to see, we're going to cover, because we're like working together on this. I'm staying with her for the time. Fly in, land in Calgary, and then we are off to the races of watching shows. We saw Yaya Bey, incredible voice, very like personable on stage, very good at just connecting with the crowd. We also saw Sun Glaciers at the Legion, again, really incredible. That was more like shoegaze, atmospheric sort of vibe. And then Friday was one of our bigger days. So picture this. Friday, work done. It's raining outside. We've just seen an amazing comedy show at Rat Boy Comedy, hosted by Tamara Siobhan. Instagram is at TEEMAIR. Super funny, incredible, had a really great time. We can hop into those clips now. What we're doing post comedy show. Okay, slight technical difficulties, but we are back. And again, you're listening to Hail Discordia on CITR 101.9 FM. And now we're going to get into Sled Island. This is what we did post-comedy show.
I'll say that Zoe has a tissue in her pocket right now.
Yeah, I do have a tissue in my pocket.
She cried at stand-up comedy.
Because, and let me tell you why, and it wasn't even from laughter, it was because it was induced. Because here's the thing, she was talking about, like, being on her period and crying about just, like, things, and then I'm also on my period twins, and I thought about, like, she said that she thinks about baby lizards and cries, and I was like,
Zoe,
I was like, oh my god, wait, they're so small. They are so small. They're so little.
I'm crying because she made a very tasteful joke about her children, and it was so inclusive and funny at the same time. Which, yeah. Hey, that's not very common.
No, that also brought a tear to my eye because I was like, wait, that really makes me, because she cares about her kids so much.
She does.
Basically, the joke was that she has three kids. One, the oldest is a boy, the youngest is a girl, and the middle child is gender fluid and uses they, them pronouns. Uh-huh. And,
Yeah. Yes.
It might have been, they might have been non-binary. They use they, them pronouns, yeah. Is what I know for a fact.
Yeah.
And then was talking about how she put the pronouns of her kids on their doors and to be, hey, him. She, her, and then they, them, and their room was we, us?
Yeah, like the mom and dad.
Shut up! What are you talking about? Of course I cried.
Again, it doesn't even like sound like a joke. It's just like sounds nice.
It's just kind of really adorable.
And that's our genre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, we just left the comedy club. Mm-hmm. We are now walking through the rain. It's really cold.
It is.
And we're on it.
I was just trying to be supportive. I'm actually not cold at all, but Zoe.
Yeah.
Fiending for
drama. Elise is in like a cut off like shirt.
Yeah, I'm in a muscle
suit. Elise is in a muscle suit. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not, and I'm in a jacket, and I'm kind of shaking a little bit. But it's really cold. We're on our way to Alicia's friend's show.
Yes.
He's the drummer.
It's called Pinball 1973.
Listen to their song.
Beer song.
Yes. Very good song.
What you want. It actually was, the guitar riffs were really, really amazing.
The guitar riffs were really good.
So I'm excited to hear that live. Yeah. And we're heading to the next venue now. One thing that I've noticed about the sort of like with the layout of all of the places in Calgary is that I only come to one place a night, really.
Can I just pitch one thing? Can we go in the car?
Let's go in the car. We're like, but I was confused. We stopped exactly 2 meters away from the car, and I thought that I thought we wanted like the rain sound or something.
No.
But okay, anyways.
Okay. Chat, we're now in the car.
We are.
Chat is crazy.
We're in the car and we're heading to the next place. And what's crazy is that I'm from Calgary and I only go to one place per night. Like a loser, apparently.
Lame-o.
Yeah. But here,
hello to her.
Yeah. But here we're going to like 4 or 5 places per evening, if not more. I'm going in and out of them, and I'm just realizing that everything's like actually one block away. So we're gonna be at the next place in like 3 minutes.
Yeah. Wait, really?
Yeah.
It's
kind of ridiculous that to even drive.
That is kind of really insane.
Is that true? Let me look it up. I'm gonna hop on Google Maps real quick.
It's raining and it's cold and it's sad outside. So
it is. And it's never like this. Guys, they're not usually like this, Calgary.
No.
Oh, I almost rolled down the windows.
Yeah, don't do that. Okay, we're on our way to the show. I'm gonna turn this off.
Bye bye.
Okay, so as you guys can hear, we are running a mile a minute, as Izzy just described. Also, again, for context as to why I was cold, I was literally just, like, at the equator for, 6 weeks, steady, like, 30 degrees Celsius the entire time.
And you're a California girl.
And I have low iron, so clock that.
It's a cocktail, okay? She's gonna be cold.
No, yeah, exactly. And also, oh my gosh, you teared up at the joke as well.
No, yeah, the we us.
The we us.
It's really sweet.
It's really sweet.
I love inclusive family.
Yeah. Okay, well, takeaway from this clip is that spirits are high, okay? We're on our way to the Mummies show, not to be confused with Here Comes the Money, the Mummies. The Mummies are at the Palomino. They're from San Bruno, California, which is the Bay Area.
Shout out.
They were founded in 1988. They're a rock band with influences of surf rock and 1950s or 1960s garage rock. So going back into our little story, we get to the Palomino to see the Mummies and proceed to sit in line for like maybe an hour, give or take. We're excited to see the bands. We're missing the openers, including Alicia's friend's band, Pinball 1973. We do a little check-in as we're on the stairs. Spirits are still there, but, you know, let's see what was going on.
We have been in this line for maybe an hour, and honestly, guys, the spirits are low.
I think I read your lips with spirits are low, and hey, I'm talking into this mic right now, looking at the crowd moshing, and fun.
Because here's the thing about this, is someone was crowd surfing, and now, well, guys, if you come to Sled Island, come early. We're going to try a new strategy tomorrow of getting there maybe an hour and a half earlier than the doors for...
Yeah, I think we should get there at like 5:30. I feel like we should get there at like 5:30.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to get there an hour early for Audibooky Beaver and try that out, and we'll just see what happens. But honestly, guys, it's okay because Alicia had a granola bar in her bag, and I have earplugs now, and my head doesn't hurt. Am I on my period and my head hurts and I'm nauseous and I'm tired and I am jet lagged? Yeah, maybe a little bit. But you know what? I bet in 20 minutes there will be a happy ending to that sentence. And that's fine.
So there indeed was not a happy ending to that sentence in 20 minutes, guys. Yeah, so I ended up ending the recording because at some point we started moving and I was like, oh my gosh, we're going in. We ended up not, but I found out that Calgary, at least during Sled Island and in my experience and just as I found, was just a very sociable city. So small talk was happening. And we heard from some people that the line went for blocks from the Palomino to the church all the way outside the venue. So we proceeded to sit there and then like make partial but unpromising movements for another 45 minutes. Mind you, like, we're still determined to get in. We have to see the mummies. We want to see this band. We're ready for it. We're putting in the time. We're putting in the effort. We're going to make it happen. Let's see our next check-in.
So we indeed did not just go in right now. Now we are perfectly placed right in front of a window that looks into the band, and we can see how much fun they're having and how much space there is.
Dude, you could literally run around in there. I'm confused. I don't understand fire code.
Like, and there's a TV right in front of it so that we can see the band in all their glory, and it's actually kind of rude.
I can see my friend in there. He looks like he's having a good time.
Wait, you should get his attention.
Are you so loud?
That is to say, Sled Island is fun, but Sled Island is also a grind, and you do need to prepare. For anyone who wants to go next year, Loki, get here early.
Yeah, get here early. Honestly, get tickets. Wow, that guy's hair is amazing. I love that. That guy has microbangs. Microbangs, I'll describe it actually for the audio listeners. The man had microbangs, a bob, and gray hair.
That is Calgary for you guys.
Is it? Yeah.
That is Calgary during Sled Island for you guys. Yeah, I expect a bob.
Okay, well, starting with, she's tired, y'all. I'm tired, y'all. It was really a great time. I sound like I'm complaining in this. I'm not. It was truly just raining, but whatever. Y'all get the vibe. Okay, more time goes by. We're in this line for at least 2 hours, dare I say three. Spirits are pushing, definitely depleting fast. Alicia's friend Layla leaves. We're talking through notes apps because it's too loud. At first, I didn't have earbuds. I tried to get some. I don't know if that's going to happen, but then the bouncer gives me some. The bouncer was super nice also. And the bouncer was also like kind of getting hate throughout the night that they really didn't deserve because they were truly just doing their job. So just be nice to your bouncers, guys, unless they're being like outwardly disrespectful to you. Like, they're truly just doing what they need to do. I'm taking a nap standing up at some point. We've been here for like truly 3 hours when suddenly the pearly gates open and we got in time just for the show. I love the funness of this show. The band, the mummies, they dress as mummies and wrap themselves in cloth as they're playing their instruments and singing. The crowd energy was incredible. Lots of people were truly just happy to be there. I usually stay away from punk scenes in Vancouver just because that's the only one I'm familiar with. Like, I personally have just like not always had like a great time in the punk scene for just like reasons, I guess. Like, I don't know, maybe it's just the ones I was in, but it just like was not a thing that like pulled me super close, honestly. Maybe it's just the pocket I was in, I don't know. But Sled Island, dude, I was living. I came alive. I felt so safe moshing. People were crowd surfing in like these really crazy ways. Someone was like running upside down, like they had their back down. They were running, putting their feet to the table because the roof was so low. Another person was like swimming, like a little like freestyle, like kind of vibe. These were like professionals. Mm-hmm. So we were moshing, and like if someone stumbled or, you know, God forbid, like fell a little bit, all hands on deck to keep them safe, get them up, and just get ready to go and start going again. And I went so hard that I lost my nose ring, my like nose stud, because one of the mummies like threw water just at us because it was hot. I don't know.
Oh my God.
And then I went to wipe it from my face, but my ring just completely took my nose stud out. Yeah. So it was kind of, I was like, I'm not going to make my way back to adrenaline right now.
No.
It's not happening. But it was so easy to get a clear path out of the crowd and just like get that thing back in.
Nice.
I felt a lot of togetherness and community. Felt like a freak and a geek, as is said. It just was genuinely incredible. But yeah, the mummies. And then next day was drag brunch at the Palomino. That was also super fun. After that, went home, rested for a bit. Watched Overcompensating, and then got ready for Otobuki Beaver, as we were talking about before. That is the show that they were the headliners for the show, and pretty much every single person that I had spoken to or just who was like talking about Sled Island, it was always about Otoboki Beaver. So we knew we had to get there early. Otoboki Beaver is a Japanese punk rock band from Kyoto. Again, they're the curators of the show. We, at some point, I believe we were talking to them, but we definitely heard this, that entailed of them being like, okay, we're going to ask our favorite bands to just play in the festival with us. So the bands that they had opened for them was BB Bomb, which is a punk rock band from Taiwan. It was their first time performing outside of Asia. We were able to talk to them at some of the other shows. Super nice. And then the other show was called Brain Bent. So yeah, we picked up sandwiches and coffee at a cafe, got there about hour and a half, maybe 2 hours before the show. Alicia dropped me off so that she could park, just so we could save time. And that was the winning ticket, because when I tell you a herd of people lined up about 5 minutes after that, it was crazy. We stay there, we eat our lunch, we meet up with Layla, everyone's rested and excited, we're feeling good. We know that we're getting in on this one. Spirits, again, are high. We camp out of the venue maybe an hour. The first band comes on, and then bam. Who's on guitar? Alicia's Boss. That band, Brain Bent, was super duper good. Lots of songs about being against like corporatism, and like really awesome lyrics with that. I really like what they did with the instrumentals. Yeah, fantastic band. Then BB Bomb came on, also incredible. And then Otoboki Beaver, they were insane. At one point, they threw a floaty out into the crowd. And then I believe it was their guitarist went and then, like, crowd surfed and, like, got onto the floaty and then, like, went, like, a little bit into the crowd and then went back. I crowd surfed for the first time, which was awesome. We saw, during the first two openers, we saw people crowd surfing. And Layla was like, wait, I want to do that. And I was like, wait, I also want to do that. So we were chatting with two people who we had met at the show of just like, well, like, how do you do it? And they gave us a full rundown. For sake of time, I'll just give a quick summary. It is that you need to like take up, like increase your surf. Okay, let's start with getting up. I'm jumping around for sake of time.
Guys, crash course.
Crash course on crowd surfing. Find someone who looks like they could probably lift you, and then just give them a little tap on the shoulder and be like, hey, like, can I go up? Mm-hmm. And with Sled Island being truly such a, like, just community-oriented, like, space, everybody pretty much said yes. There was a lot of crowd surfing at this show. You say, can I go up? Hopefully that happens. When you go up, like, go onto your back. Don't go onto your front. Go onto your back. Very important to know, because you don't want like a palm to your face.
No.
Before you even go up, actually, don't make sure you have nothing in your pockets. But
my pockets are always so full.
No crowds. No, I genuinely was gonna try to go up with like my camera, and I was like, no, I'm gonna lose that. Yeah. Someone lost their shoe at one point. Mm-hmm. Go onto your back. Keep like a tight core. Yeah, like Izzy has. Arms spread out. Yeah, spread out your arms. You don't want to, like, be just, like, a pencil, and then it's more difficult for people to, like, hold you, carry you. And, yeah, just kind of, like, have a good time from there. So that was cool. My pants ripped.
No!
While I was crowd surfing. From the knee to the crotch. Like, ripped. Yeah, I know. Like, and it was, like, some of my favorite pants.
In a legit way. Like fully ripped. Way. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you win some, you lose some.
You win some, you lose some. And I got to be up there for a while, and I'm glad we did it. I have a really fun picture to go with it.
It sounds like you really spread your wings at Sled Island.
Wow. Hey, I did. Hey, look at that.
Yeah.
Hey, look at that.
A little growing, a little glowing.
Yeah, a little growing.
Well, I'm obsessed.
Yeah. It was easily one of the best concerts I've ever been to. The energy was insanely good. Everyone was just, like, so excited to be there. It was really, like, wholesome.
Wow. Guys, go to Sled Island. Go to a Calgary festival, because the people are going to be good, it sounds like.
Yeah. No, genuinely. It was awesome.
Yeah.
the last day we saw like two bands. One was called Muñeca. They're from Seattle, Washington. They're a metal punk rock band. They were super good, also great energy. And then the last band that we saw was Black Ends at the Palomino, also from Seattle. They described their music as gunk pop. Very, very good. During the show, the lead singer, Nicole, says, quote, I've got toxic shock syndrome. And then we all hear a gasp from the crowd. And then she goes, oh, wait, I've got toxic rock syndrome. I mean, and I made a notes app that day just to write that down.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, we talked to people after. It was fantastic.
That's hilarious. TSS is no joke, y'all.
Yeah, real.
Okay. That was an amazing recap. Thank you, Zoe.
Hey, yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys, for listening. We're kind of at the end of our hour now.
We're at the end of our hour, but we filled it right up. Mm-hmm. And thank you guys for hearing what we listened to this month and what we read this month. Our favorites from our lovely Discorder magazine and our favorites from Zoe's escapades mm-hmm. in Canadian music. And our little mini escapade to the weekend concert, also in Canadian music. You guys are the best. We are Hail Discordia at CITR 101.9 FM. We love talking to you. We hope you love listening.
Love you guys.
Love you guys. Izzy and Zoe out.
Out. Shifting. Wash my mind. My brain cells lifting. Yeah.